Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello everyone, I'm Sarah Carradine, podcasting from the traditional lands of the Muwinina people in Nipaluna, Hobart.
I'm Mari Forth.
And this is Crime Scene, the true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told.
Subscribe to our feed at robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed to get your true crime on Tuesdays. Sarah, what are we talking about today?
Well, let's open today's file. We watched Indian Predator, The Butcher of Delhi. It's a three-part documentary series on Netflix in Hindi and English, directed by Aisha Sood. And we could not discuss it without this returning guest. She first joined us for Keeper of the Ashes. She's a mess magnet, one of my co-hosts on the Bridgerton recap, from San Francisco via Oklahoma by way of Mumbai. The one and only Sasha Joseph is here. Hey, Sasha, welcome back to Crime Scene.
So glad to be back. Y'all said gory and India, so obviously I'm here because we talked about Girl Scouts getting murdered. Now we're talking about other people getting butchered. Like, I don't know what that says about my brand, but I love it. And I'm so excited to be here talking with y'all.
Yes. Sorry.
Sorry. No, I love it.
sorry we got have you here for the gory stuff. We barely cover anything really badly.
But I know, every time that's we what's do, funny. I know, and it has to be like Oklahoma and India, right? Like the two places, the only one person I think on RHAP that you know.
Yeah. We'll let you choose the next one and maybe it'll be about something a bit more fruity or yeah. nutty.
Yeah. You know, but yeah. I like this stuff, so I can't even be mad. That's the mm-hmm. problem. Where mm-hmm. I was home alone yesterday watching it, and then because my husband was gone for dinner, he comes home middle of third episode and doesn't bat an eye that I'm watching this. And then I was like, oh my God. Usually, you know, I expected like, what are you watching or what's going on? He came in and he's like, oh, okay. And just kept going about his day. And I was like, cool.
Well, gory it is. Let's get into the crime and then we can discuss how it was presented. Chandrakant Jha was a serial killer active in Delhi and previously in his village of Gosai, as it turns out. He killed and decapitated and de-limbed three men in 2006 and 2007 and left their torsos outside the walls of Tihar prison, where he had been an inmate and where he'd been abused and humiliated by guards. He sent taunting letters and made phone calls to the police. When he was captured, he revealed many more killings than those three. But in India, what is said in police interrogations is not admissible in court without physical evidence to back it up, and so he was not charged with the earlier crimes. In 2013, he was convicted and sentenced to death, which was commuted to life in prison. Sasha, your overall thoughts on Indian Predator, The Butcher of Delhi?
I just have to say, as soon as I knew it was in Delhi, I knew some shit was going to go down, like, honestly, because unfortunately, as the capital of India, it's just, it's also a place where, not that it doesn't happen anywhere else, it's just, it's super concentrated here. I'm from Mumbai, just so folks know, and I lived there till I was 14. But Delhi, even now, is unfortunately known as, like, the rape capital of the country, because it's just, it's really unsafe. And you know, I'm sure there are people that are going to be like, no, that's not true. But just statistically, a lot of that stuff, like for women specifically, I feel like a lot of that happens and it's really unsafe. And I mean that unfortunately for the whole country and specifically in Delhi. So I will say I was very surprised that it was men that he was doing this too, because as soon as I saw Indian Butcher in Delhi, right, like my preconceived notions, my biases came in, and I just couldn't believe that it was men that he was attacking from jump, from what we found out in the last episode. So I was just, I wanted to know more about like why he chose those victims, because that to me was very interesting. And I never knew about this, because again, I think there are other crimes in India that get way more attention than like serial killing does.
And I mean, good point, because we'll talk about it, but for my overall as well, of course, I didn't know anything about this. I've seen like a lot of comments and critics about it, saying like a lot of people who actually live there, the director Aisha, when she was pitched this, what happened was Vice Media and Netflix India came together to produce some Indian content, and they're going with Indian Predator. It's actually going to be a series. This is the first in the series. And Aisha was actually presented several cases, and this was a case that she chose because she said, even though she lived in Delhi, she had not heard of it. So I thought I had very high hopes going into a product that I've not heard of the crime before. For me, though, this is like a roller coaster. It was like a lot of up and down, up and down, up and down. Again, it's a 3-part docuseries. Each part is roughly between 40 minutes to an hour-ish, if that. But it truly felt like, okay, you had me, then you lost me, then you had me again. And some things were really not clear. Like Sasha said, I don't know if we got like... Maybe I find it insufficient, but I really feel like we didn't get a clear reason as to why he was killing these people. We don't get a clear resolution, so we can talk about that later. Very contradicting resolutions on that. But other than that, it's another 3-parter, and I'm so sorry, guys. I'm gonna
Where's the t-shirt? Where's the t-shirt? Make it a feature.
Sorry. Let us know. Reach out to us. Let us know if you want us to stop complaining about this. But it's very interesting. It wasn't until we started, this podcast that I started really paying attention to how many true crime documentaries are turned into docuseries, and how many like docuseries are like the market almost feels flooded with like 3-part docuseries. And now I'm just kind of like, at this point, after watching so many back, I'm like, is it necessary?
Well, past and future guest of the podcast, Sarah D. Bunting, calls it a fire hose of material. It does feel like that sometimes, like how much is coming. But I mean, we're watching it so you don't have to. I was the same, Murray, and I was very much looking forward to, I mean, of course, looking forward to talking to both of you just in general, but in particular about this, because I had, like, there was so much that was good and interesting, and there was other stuff that, I thought, I mean, quite apart from anything else, in the opening titles, although I know that Indian Predator is going to be a series of different cases, there's a henned woman's hand lying on the floor with blood, and then we have men being killed. So they had gone for that very stereotypical idea that predators always predate on women, and in this case it was very interesting to have someone who was whose victims were men. Let's jump into it. I'd like to start with Dr. Vaya, who is fantastic. I want her to be my auntie. Yeah. She's a clinical forensic scientist. And she was so cheerful throughout the entire process discussing Char. Here I felt I got the closest in understanding his motivations. She discusses his letters and the language that he uses, and she discusses the possible reasons. And at the end, when she's obviously asked, do you think someone like that can be rehabilitated? She very cheerfully thinks perhaps not. Sasha, Dr. Vaya, what did you, how did you relate to her?
Queen, here's my thing. I think she was almost the saving grace for me, where I really liked actually Surinder Singh, the one of the cops, and who was, I think, the like the muscle you needed for to move the documentary over. But I think she is what we needed to kind of stay in it, because all our questions, like, we, I mean, y'all already said this, but like there was so much of the sociology and the psychology of him that we never got. And I don't know about y'all, but because I rewatched a little bit of it this morning, like the first episode, to see, like, did I miss this? Because I don't want to show up to the podcast just looking confused. But why did they pick her, right? Is she a subject matter expert, or did she work on the case? And then, you know, and that's what was a little bit of cognitive dissonance in my mind, because she herself is amazing. I mean, she's a director, right, of the forensic something in India or in Delhi, like the forensic, I think, institution or teaching institution. So I understand why she's so good at what she does. And I just needed to know, like, did she already know about the case? And then she's like giving us the reasoning, or is it that she, you know, she happened to work on it? I'm assuming she did not work on it just because of how fast he was caught. But, you know, I just, that was like a question again I was left with a lot of these people, honestly, that were part of the documentary that didn't need to be.
So Dr. Vaya was working as a director of the School of Criminology and Behavioral Sciences in Rashtriya Raksha University. But yeah, so I agree. There wasn't much backstory on her. I did not get the sense that she talked to him. I feel like it was definitely one of those, like, they present materials to her, she read the materials, and then she gave her expert opinion on it as someone who has not spoken to the subject, which we get in these type of documentaries all the time. I do want to go back to your mention of Surinder Singh.
Surinder Singh, yes, he was my next port of call. I mean, very interesting. One of the things, the very strong things I think about this documentary for me is the way that the story is told, because he gives us, I've read some critics saying, you know, too much exposition, but I loved the way his mind worked. He is, if I may say, I won't say meat and potatoes in case he's a vegetarian. He is the, you know, lentils and rice.
I doubt he's vegetarian.
But the, he gives us the step-by-step. I went here. These were the people who were with me. We then made this phone call. We then went down this street. And it was almost hypnotic, because I feel like in other documentaries we don't get that procedural step-by-step. So Surinder Singh, for you, Mari, what were your thoughts?
Well, I was going to say he did have excellent recall. He was telling us the name of the other officers like we knew them. I was like, I don't know these people. Okay, sure. sure, but right. I kind I feel like
I was like, who's Pelman? Like, stop saying it.
He was just listing off names of like, yeah, so and so and so and so win. It's like, we don't know these people, which is fine. But I do kind of share some of the criticism of this being like very much through the lens of the police officers and being very much. It does. I do feel like Aisha tried to make it very objective, and I think it kind of was. But I think a big piece is left out in a sense that one of the reasons, or one of the reasons that I gleaned that wasn't really thoroughly dived into, that, you know, this is about him versus the police. This was a Chandra Khan against the police. And it was because of his first stint in jail. He was in jail in 1998 to 2002, I think it was, for 4 years, but was released because not a lot of evidence. And it was supposed to be in jail for murder. Now, they didn't really give us too much on that time period. A lot of that, what I just said, came from like researching. But during that time period, what we are introduced to in that first episode, when the bodies start showing up outside of TR jail, it's because he says that he was like unfairly beaten and treated like during his stay in prison, and that he hated the cops. He was calling the cops all sorts of names and was taunting them and telling them that they would never find him. So I kind of wanted to know a tad bit more about that, and maybe even go into about like the police in Delhi, because the only other time we even get like a hint of maybe, you know, the local police aren't on the up and up is when we get the interview with Anil's family. Mm-hmm. And how they talk about their harrowing journey of trying to find out what happened to him and maybe if he's a victim of Chandra Khan, but how the police were basically no help to them and basically charged them all this money just to give them a runaround for years. So I really feel like there's a piece that they could have explored with kind of like with like how Making a Murderer did, is like, did his experience, his first experience in jail, possibly lead to this killing spree? And, you know, they didn't touch it. They decided to go the psychopath route, which I agree. I think he's probably also a psychopath.
Especially after we know the village stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Because I think I was with you, Mari, where I was like, oh, they're giving Making a Murderer. And then we get episode 3 and I was like, oh, hell.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So episode 1, we get the discovery of the torso, the letters, the taunting. And by the end of the episode, he's been captured. So you think, well, what are the next 2 episodes? And one, we talked to a developmental economist, very lightly touched on the community problems that may arise. That's a whole documentary in itself. And it was touched on and kind of like a hot stove, pulled away from poverty, classism, and various other things. And then in episode 3, we go to his village and we speak to people who openly knew he was a murderer when he was a young man, and it was never spoken of, and they were frightened of him. And in fact, one of the subjects bursts into tears at the thought that Dar will see this documentary and realize that he's spoken about him. And his fear is so palpable, even though he hasn't been living there for such a long time. So we can step through that. I just did want to highlight that Dr. Vaya talked about the letters. The first thing she talks about are the letters. And she said that in the language and the way they were written, they showed displaced anger towards his parental figures. She says cheerfully, if he loved his mother, this language would not have been used, he said. Is that cultural, Sasha? I sort of love my mother, and I swear like anything.
No, I mean, it's the particular swear words. I was looking at the subtitles and like they did not do a great job like translating the swear words. So no, those are like specific swear words on your mom and on your dad. So that's what she meant by it. Like it wasn't like just the F word. It was like your mom's vagina, or like it was, it's yes. very specific. So that's what she means. Like there are different ways you can curse in Hindi, which I mean, he was using, that aren't that. Like when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, is someone okay? Yeah, no one's around. Like it's okay. It's on TV.
Okay.
They were, they're quite wild. Like folks don't just use them.
Yeah, let's get into that, because we normally do this and I didn't think about this, but so it's available in subs and dubs, right, Sarah?
Correct.
I did dub the whole time because I actually liked the dubbing on this one. This was
the best dub.
Yeah.
Best dub we've had. The interesting thing though for me, because I did subs the first go through and then dubs, and I was surprised, like really fantastic quality, sound quality. The voice actors were very good. They put a little bit into it. They put the hesitations and so on. What was very odd was that they dubbed the talking heads who were speaking English. They dubbed them in English. I thought,
I found
that strange. Yes.
They did, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I listened dubbed the whole time. I was like, I'm not even going to attempt.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was like, no, that attempt. Makes sense. I would have done that too.
Yeah, because again, this is also like, it's been back to back. So I'm like, I have to also do other things. So I did dub, and the dubbing was completely great. I love when I don't have to hear the underlying track under it, because I just feel like I'm getting the whole story. Sarah's bang on, the actual dubbing acting was great. I did realize that at some point that there was actual, like it was actually matching up. It was like people who were actually speaking English were still getting dubbed too. So I did realize that. But the rest of the time I was like, man, this is so good, because it really did feel like it was matching like what the person in front of me was trying to get, was trying to illustrate. So Sasha, so you listened to it in the original Hindi because you are a speaker of Hindi.
Yes,
like
fluently. Yeah. That's one of the languages. Yeah, I speak.
Yes, I know.
So that's why I was grateful. Because when it started talking, I was like, oh, cool. I don't have to I can take notes and it's fine.
Mm-hmm. And so you do feel like from your opinion, there is a big difference in the two?
I felt like there was the difference was just, okay, the biggest thing I caught, and again, I tried to do research on it and I couldn't figure out why, but one of the things I caught is he would sign it and in Hindi, and I can read it. I can read the letter. So he would sign it and it would, you know, and it said dad, and first letter I think said dad and brother-in-law. But they were just saying your daddy CC. And I was like, that's not what the letter says. And then eventually he dropped the dad and he started saying your son-in-law and your brother-in-law. So I felt like that was a huge thing. And I was like, what? We're not going to talk about this? Why is he saying that? And then I was wondering, is that a Bihari, particular thing that I am missing? Because I'm not from the northeast. That's where Bihar is. Like, I'm from Mumbai. Our Hindi and, you know, it's like Spanish, right? Where it changes from different areas. So that's what I felt like maybe it could have been. But I don't know. I was like, why is he signing it? Like, I think he was signing it Jijaji and Sala, which literally means brother-in-law and son-in-law. Yeah.
Signing it as if he is related to.
Yeah. Like instead of saying, you know, and I would read the closed caption. It said your daddy, CC. But I was like, I think that's what they're trying to convey to us. You know, that's the feeling of it. So that's why I let it go. But I wanted to name that. Like it was, I felt like that was weird.
I mean, one of the things that when I first started and I was sort of enjoying the world that I'm being shown. And then there is this thing in the back of my head about sort of exoticizing India. Mm. I think that who was this made for is one of the lines that I think the documentary walks very finely, so that it gives non-Indian people a doorway in, but it's not so pedantically spelling everything out that it is, you know, kindergarten for an Indian viewer. Mm. I mean, it is made by Indian Netflix or Netflix India, who are coming up. I mean, one of my recommendations later will be from them. And the work is, I think, really good, like really in good. Terms of the production is really good, like the titles, the filming, the use of our favorite thing, reenactments. Actually, we are jumping about a little, but can we talk about the reenactments of the murder? Because we get a lot of those in episode two, and I wrote in my notes, I don't need a reenactment of the murder and dismemberment.
I know.
What about you, Sasha? Like, the sound.
The whole time, I felt like it was a Dexter copy. That's what all I could think of, because one, right, like Dexter, the TV show, does a lot of dismemberment, whatever. And I was thinking, because again, with the first two episodes we're presenting, was he in his mind was a little bit of like, I'm only killing bad guys, so I'm fine. So I was like, Dexter in real life, I'm confused again until episode. But so I don't know why I needed to see the same scene over and over again. And I don't need to hear it, because then I was like, can I eat meat tomorrow? I don't think so. Like, this is like horrible.
Yeah.
Mari, I mean, the sound was fantastic. And I think one of the reasons we like the dubs is I think they remixed the sound, which might be also why the English speakers were dubbed in English, because I think they did an entire remix. Mari, these scenes of murder.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the episode two was literally just, it was all reenactment, to be quite honest. Episode one definitely had reenactments. I mean, the whole thing is basically three episodes of long reenactments, but at least with the first episode and a lot of the third episode, we're also getting the talking heads, which are like talking directly to us and explaining like the action. Two was almost kind of like an origin story style movie with nothing but recreations. So that was kind of like off-putting in a sense. Like episode one, I really liked that, and I'm not trying to go back and forth too much, but I thought episode one was really good because we get the bodies, you know, being dumped in front of T-Hard jail, we get the notes, we get the taunting, we get the police talking about their investigation step by step, and it feels like your run-of-the-mill like true crime documentary. And like Sarah said at the beginning, by the time they caught him at the end, I was like, oh. Like, I was like, yeah, well, that was easy. Like, they he signs all these notes like, catch me if you can, and then like 10 minutes later they catch him. I was like, oh man, this wasn't gonna be as I thought. I was in for a cat and mouse game. But by the time we get to episode two, that's where like I said, if episode one is like the up of the roller coaster, episode two is like the dip, because they then pull it back to then kind of try and give us his backstory, and then it's kind of like, I get it. Like, it's like, you wanna, even if your subject is a murderer, you do want to try and fill in their backstory so people know where they're coming from. And as long as you don't try and overhumanize them, it can be done fine. It just kind of killed the sales out of the whole thing, because again, like, we're promised Dexter, we're promised Catch Me If You Can. He gets caught. We then go back to what is originally just them telling us about his life and his small village. We meet his friends. And it's just kind of like that first half of that second episode is just like, I think I probably nodded off a few times and had to keep restarting it, because it was just, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to be here taking a step back, hearing about his wife and kids and like, oh, he's a migrant worker. But I got it. I understood why they did it. They had to set the scene for us non-Indian viewers to let us know like what migrant laborers do. What's the life of people in Delhi who are not well off, you know, and setting the scene. And I completely got it. I understood it. You know, the big part of my brain, the other part of my brain was like, this is too much of this. And you've lost me at this point. Am I off base with that, Sarah?
I don't think so at all. I mean, I think the intention, yes, was to stop down. I mean, we hear from Jar himself. I mean, there's a note at the end that they were not able to get access to him, but they have his writings and what he told the police. He said his parents weren't interested in his well-being. I mean, his mother was a teacher, but there seemed to be a lot of children and they were left to fend for themselves and go hungry sometimes. He developed a hatred for them. When he was in Delhi, the police harassed him, demanded money, demanded a motorcycle as a Diwali gift.
Yes.
He gained a sort of a theory of his victims, which was that he punished people based on their actions and for their own good. And he gave his victims two chances. So either you reform or you will be removed from the file, he called it. And I, much though I don't want to sympathize or support a serial killer in any way, I liked being given that scaffolding for what his actions were, what his thought process was, and it made sense of why his victims were men. And these were men, also poor men, also men in strife. He would sometimes take them in. He would feed them. He would give them a place to stay. That's sort of the goodness of his heart as far as in his own mind. But they, the transgressions that they were allowed, these two transgressions were extremely light. It could be that you don't put your shoes in the right place. It could be, you know. So I appreciated what the documentary was trying to do in that second episode. I think this was where they had the opportunity to expand on the sort of economic situation more. Yes, we got it, but there was more to delve in there. It was a dip for me. Sasha, what about you?
Yeah, same. I think there also, I think what I felt like as an Indian viewer, it was missing is that like, we don't need to dub stuff down so much in true crime documentaries because one, folks are going to do the research, right? Like they are going to want to know more about this person. They're going to, you know, do just naturally. We're going to Google along. It's just how I feel like a true crime person is. And I think I would have rather dropped a little bit of that and then kept like, how the heck did the informant find him? So like, what do you mean in three days, man's is found? And and fine, right? Let's say it was the only 3-day thing. Why aren't we selling that piece of it? That it only took 3 days. How cool is that? And then go into his interviews, because I know that you can't, what they showed us, which I didn't even know this was a thing, that you can't interview people in jail.
Right.
So then like, I think episode 2 could have been his psychology a little bit, you know, of like finding his interviews, or can, you know, Netflix get special permission? I don't know, something, grease some wheels, baby. It's India at the end of the day, and like get, you know, some of his stuff. Cause I think when he was talking to the media, those few clips that we got, it was chilling. Cause he was like, what do you mean? You're just reporting false news. Why do you think I only killed 4 people? There could be more, but I'll only tell the judge. Like, that's wild. And I wish second episode was that. Because first episode, they could have wrapped up the 3-day thing. Second episode could have been that. And then I think third episode would have been that fun. But wait, there's more. Because I mean, the third episode was, to me, the strongest because of its surprise element.
It was a gag.
Yeah. Where I was like,
it was incredible. Yeah.
This episode is made possible by PwC. A robot may not be coming for your job, but competitors are coming for your market share. At PwC, we pair the right tech with the right solutions to help you gain a competitive edge. Reimagine operations from the cloud, fuel innovation with responsible AI, and detect risks before they become headlines. That's human-led and tech-powered. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at thenewequation.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Once you realize they're going to tell you everything that they did step by step, I was very intrigued because of having seen Indian Detectives, which I'll talk about later. I appreciated the policing methods of the Indian police. And here in Delhi, one of the other talking heads tells us that the informant network is really strong. I mean, it probably is for all police departments, but it seems very openly used in Delhi. This was H.S. Dhaliwal, who was also a DPC assigned to the case. And he talked about the informant network. And I found that very interesting. So like you, Mari, it was like, oh, they found him. But it was a case of they had gone about, they had spoken to person after person after person, and presumably there's a little something in it for you if you make that phone call. I found that this was the strength of episode one. What about you, Mari?
Yeah, I think episode two, I agree with both what you and Sasha said. I did like that we did get some of his writings, and that was the basis of most of the backstory that we got. And I think it's a catch 22. You know what I'm saying? It's like you appreciate the information from the murderer, but it's like, are they really a reliable narrator? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's telling us, oh, there were all of these reasons that I had to kill these people. Like, I gave them chance after chance after chance, but they were just so bad, such bad people. They needed to be removed from society. And we get, and that's how you get suckered in. And that's how, you know, episode three becomes the gag of it all. But it's like, we should have known, because whenever, that's why I don't like those like serial killer confession tapes or anything like that, because it always, to me, you just never know if you're getting the full truth. You know, you're always going to get the spin that the murderer wants to give you the spin. And then so to me, it kind of just falls victim to like kind of like glorifying and letting their story be told more than the victim's. And if I do have one major complaint of this documentary, it's like we did not get a lot of the victim stuff, like the victims who died. Like, I feel like they were just endless names, if that. The three bodies, I feel like they didn't even really give us their names in the documentary, or focus on them, or how he knew them, or like when they disappeared. We know nothing truly about the victims that were actually claimed. On episode three, we get a little bit more about the other possible victims.
Take us into episode three, Mari.
Oh, okay. So episode three, like by the end of episode two, I'm really just sitting here like, why? I'm really getting ready to come on this podcast and be like, why did I just waste so much time? I was actually probably even contemplating like reaching out to Sarah and be like, should we even do something else at this point? Like, I truly
honestly
was.
Same.
Yeah, because before the third episode, I was really like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. Like, there's nothing gripping here, really. And then episode three pops off, and I'm just like, you cannot make this up. So once we then get back to episode three, like really interviewing some of the so-called friends that we met in episode two, that's when things started to really get interesting. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm back. because we start to get stories about how some of the people that were like there for the interview had survived Chandrakant. I don't understand. Like, I was so shooketh. At least two or three of them were like, yeah, I got away. Sasha, what did you think of episode three?
Yeah, like, this is where we meet, or we're like actually deep, I should say, because we've met them before. But we meet Sanjay Bedo, who, number one, best person. I was so into his story, because he just like did not give two F's about what was going on. And then we meet Jadhav Ashoksha, and then which is like amazing. We meet Akhilesh Sharma. We meet which is it? Paswan. Yeah, Dev Narayan Paswan, which are like, they're so scared. And I was like, he's out? Is that what happened? Because how are these people sharing all of this? I'm so confused.
Yeah. And like Shah, his brother was a murder victim. And I really wish they had focused on his brother a little bit more. But only because his brother was not a part of the original people that he was charged for killing. So we're told like several tales of like possible murders that happened when he was younger, but the one that like really stuck with me was Bidu. He tells about how he like Chandrakant like lured him to his house saying like, oh, I need to move stuff, can you help me move stuff? And Bidu goes, and when he's there, there are two other men tied up. One of them is Murali Shah. And Bidu is, he's talking about how he's scared, he's talking about how Chandrakant takes like the picture of him, because what we're introduced two at like, I think it was the end of episode two in a very chilling way that really starts off episode three, is all these pictures, like these pictures from Chandra Khan's like personal camera that they're saying that has not ever been shown. And I don't know about you guys. I'm like literally like looking at the pictures like through my hands. Like, I don't know what's coming up. I don't want to see nothing. But Bidu's telling the story about how he's there. Two guys are tied up. He gets the picture taken. I think Chandra Khan like went to get them food. Yeah, he went to get them samosas. Yeah,
Bidu says, before you kill me, can you feed me? I'm hungry.
Yes.
Extraordinary.
And they got out of there. he untied the two of them, including Murali Shah, and they got out of there. Shah took the camera. Unfortunately, he does end up dying later. And, you know, we're told that he was and eventually did become a victim of Chandra Khan. But like when we get Shah's brother, which was what I started this whole rant on, Shah's brother was telling us about how Murali grabbed the camera, how the camera had basically just sat at his house until after he died. And then his wife got it, got the pictures. They developed the pictures, and then we're seeing these pictures, and these pictures were just chilling, like completely chilling. Sarah, what did you think about these pictures?
Well, I was looking between my fingers, and for viewers with delicate sensibilities, that he himself, unless we don't see them, didn't take photos of the victims dead. It is worse to see the victims alive, tied up, some with lips sewn together, some of them gagged. I mean, these are truly chilling photographs. And then we find out that there were packs of these photographs circulating around the village. Sasha, how did this strike you?
I'm so confused. Like, I have to say why. And I mean, the doctor says this, right? Like, where she says, SLV Elias says, actually talks about this, where there's 3-1. So how did this happen? And technically it's even 4 because the guy that came up with the whole samosa plan wasn't even bound. So how is it that it's 3-1 and then they're not fighting back, but instead they're just kind of, and this is not the victim blame. It's just, I'm curious about the psychology of it, where I'm trying to figure out, yeah, what was the fear he instilled in them? Was it one at a time? You know, he got one, then he brought the second, then he brought the third over, and then that's how it happened. But why didn't the village come together and like lock him up or do something, or honestly just like end his life? Just if I'm being honest, I don't like, not again, not to like put Bihar in such a bad light, but there, in addition to all the beautiful things that come out of there, there are a lot of lawlessness sometimes that happens. So I was surprised that they weren't leaning into that piece a little bit more, like the village people. Like, I was like, y'all are too upstanding. Like, if this is happening to even one of us, let alone half the village, it's a wrap on this man. But they keep saying, we don't want to get caught in a murder charge. Like, different people said that. And the psychology, like, of the fear was fascinating to me, and the distrust of the system, which I understand as well, because if you're poor and you can't pay off systems, I don't just mean cops, just systems, you can't use money to get ahead, then you're getting left behind in a lot of these places. And I think that's a product of that fear.
Yeah. And again, it kind of also makes me wonder, I feel like we didn't get a answer on Murali Shah's death, because I want to know how you're caught in that situation first, and then end up there saying that they think Chandra Khan killed him not a second time, but you know what I'm saying? Like, did he get caught slipping twice? Like, I'm really surprised, but I guess what Aisha wanted to do was not focus on the murders that they really could not prove, but really focus on the stories of the people who were right there in front of her, telling them about like the times they got away and stuff like that, I think. But
Yeah, I mean, on that point, the most heartbreaking interviews are with the wife and son of Anil Mandal. He was killed in October 2006. And we have Bharati, his wife, and Vijay, his son, who thought he might have been in jail. He went out one day intending to return and didn't. It was a very strange, long story of them going to the prison week after week and asking to see their husband and father, and the police and the jailers putting them off. Meanwhile, this man is dead. Dead and not identified. So it wasn't that that they knew he was dead. They certainly knew he wasn't in the prison. And Bharati, in the end, very pitiably says, I only agreed to talk to you, the filmmakers, because I thought that you would help us and give us information. And her face in that moment, as if yet again she has been let down, yet again she has been used in one way or another, is stunning. Sasha?
I mean, it's very much an indication of the system. That's not an isolated case, is what I want to say, where a lot of folks, I think, are disenfranchised, or cops will take advantage of you. My first thought, and I want to know if any Indian listeners are out there, if y'all thought this too, where my thought was, thank God she birthed a son and not a daughter, because I can't imagine going with a daughter to these corrupt cops and having, you know, like, because all they can really ask a son is for money. But there's so many stories of cops just taking advantage in many ways of these uneducated poor people that just have no other way of being, you know, or that have no way of fighting for themselves or standing up for themselves. So I can only imagine what would have happened even worse. But also, how frustrating can this system get? Because and there's a billion people in the country. So I don't know how crimes get solved at all, if I'm being honest, because there's just the population is just so much. And in these big cities, I couldn't believe they found him in 3 days, because I was like, he's gone in the wind. Like, it's so easy to be lost because of just the volume of people. So that's another piece to it where Indian police is like not the cleanest. I mean, my own mom has some wild stories that she's had to deal with. And there's so many people.
One of the police tells us that 40 to 55 unidentified bodies are reported to the police every year, and they're only preserved for 72 hours and then they're buried. So if they're not identified within that time, they're buried. One of the journalists tells us that police lean towards investigating cases where there are clues rather than where the victim cannot be identified. So it's as if the victim can't be identified. It's very hard to know then who killed them. Mari, this mother and son, how did they strike you?
It was really like one of the most heartbreaking parts of the documentary, and they're at the end here. And it was kind of confusing because now I'm looking at our notes. Was the husband that was killed, you know, and Vijay's father, was he one of the bodies that showed up?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Anil Mandal.
So again, I watched, because I was very confused as to, because where they place their story is kind of confusing in the overall narrative of the show, because it's after he's sentenced to death / life in prison. And then we get this story, which is a really heartbreaking story of, you know, the family trying to figure out what happened to the father. But what they're told, you know, what they tell us is like, you know, oh, we were finally told after 3 years, but we still don't know when he died or how he died. And I was looking for a tie-in in that section as to, was he a known victim? But I didn't get the tie-in in that section. And so now I'm looking at y'all notes and I'm like, okay, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but they definitely didn't link that right there in that section. I know that for a fact.
I think we didn't get a lot of who the bodies were in the first try. So it doesn't even matter. Exactly. Like, to me, that was the bigger issue, right? Like, they kept even one guy. We only have his first name.
Yeah, I think two of them. We only
two of them.
Oh, wait, yeah. It's two. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what the hell? You know, like, we just have no idea. And I just, I can't imagine
how they must
you
feel.
Can find these people.
Yeah.
So we learned that in 2013, Chandrakant was convicted for murder in the three cases of the torsos by the jail, Anil Mandal in October 2006, and then two men who we only know their first name, Appenda, in April 2007 and Dalip in May 2007. I'm assuming we only know their first names because Chandrakant only knew their first names. I'm not sure why. The death sentence was commuted to life in prison. And then a very confusing thing happened to me where some people were talking as if Chandrakant was out on parole, an invisible man somewhere in Delhi. And the reenactment gives us, of course, the actor looking down. And I thought, oh, he's going to look at me. He's going to look at me. And he does. He looks up and looks straight at me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, they're doing this. And he's still out there today. But then the titles at the end said that he's serving his life sentence in Tihar jail. Where is the disconnect, Mari?
I have no clue. But this was so, that was the most frustrating thing about me. I'm like, about this for me. I'm like, you brought me back and then now you took me out again. Like, huh? How at the end is your title card, like the words on the screen that are the black screen, white words, overemphasis on things. How can it be saying that he's still serving his life sentence in Tihar jail, but your subjects that you had talking right before this title card said, two of them, two different subjects, said that he is out on parole and we don't know where he is. I am confusion and I don't like it.
I literally almost fell over because I was like, is Netflix providing security to this whole village? They just rolled on mans. They said they sang like a canary and they didn't even tell the police. And this is my other question. Did the police go and investigate these people? Why don't I know? Not investigate these people, but like investigate him and reach for these people? Me thinks not. I don't know. And because I think that if the police got hold of the pictures, couldn't they use that as evidence? Well, because that's what our queen, Dr. S.L. Vaya, says. Well, this could be a new way to try him, but we get none of that either. So what y'all doing, police? Anyway, and I'm going to fight with Kush on it because that's the journalist that said it. Because I went back and looked at it because I was like, what? What do you mean? He's out. Mm-hmm. And I was like about to cry. And then the title card said, no, no, no. And even not only that, because I Googled it because, you know, I don't trust anything anymore. And he asked in 2022 in January to be like released on bail for 3 months. And that got denied. So I don't understand. Did the journalist just get bad intel?
I wondered if they were just sort of setting up that idea of the serial killer who walks among us rather than Chandrakant himself being that person. And somehow we just kind of missed a nuance where it was, imagine if he was out there. That's the only way I could resolve it in my head because he is still in Tihar jail.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of because I'm so we are confirmed. I just want to make sure we are safe. Like,
yes,
so
that's what I'm saying. I mean, security for this damn village.
And also, we're talking about it. Is he going to come and get us? I mean, it was very, very well set up to make us feel like that. Well, two of you are.
I don't think Mans is getting visa.
He's not coming. As Mari said at the beginning, this is part of a series from Netflix India. The series is called Indian Predator. This one was called The Butcher of Delhi, and he was, and they certainly gave us plenty of reenactments of butchering. The next one is called Diary of a Serial Killer, and they say when a suspect is found in the killing of a journalist, the case is considered closed until a secret diary is found indicating 13 more murders and possible cannibalism. Will you be watching it?
Are you making me cover it? Then I'll.
So let's move to our ratings. Sasha, how many magnifying glasses are you going to give Indian Predator, the Butcher of Delhi, out of a possible 5?
I still liked it. I want to say again, episode 2, like, stumbled, but at the end of the day, episode 3 was so ridiculous that it got me. So I think I would recommend this. So I think I would give it 3.5, 4.
Yeah, you gotta land on one.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. 3.5 because of second episode. Otherwise, it would have been 4.
Wonderful. Mari, what about you?
I agree. I'll give it 3.5. I, you know, it was between 3 and 3.5 for me, but I think 3.5 feels right because I did find it entertaining once I finished it.
Yes.
And lucky for it, I binged it because if I would have stopped, it would have probably been a different story. But, you know, I was able to binge it, which is what they want you to do with these type of docuseries. They want you to binge it. I give it a 3.5. But of course, I think that it, if they had like maybe trimmed down the middle episode and just cut it in half and then split it into like 1 and 2. This could have been a 2-parter. It didn't have to be 3 episodes. That'll always be my complaint. If I can find a way to chop something up, I'll chop it up and I'll tell you right here and now. So I found it enjoyable. I would recommend it. If you sat through this whole thing or not, I just feel like it is a pretty easy watch too. It's pretty easy. It's nothing too complicated. So I'll give it a 3.5 magnifying glasses. And what about you, Sarah?
Yeah, I'm going to go 3.5. I mean, I think this director is very interesting. If you look at her IMDb, she's come up through production design, assistant director, and she's really put the hard yards in. I think she's a very interesting storyteller, as we talked about with Skye Borgman and I Just Killed My Dad some weeks ago. If Netflix orders 3 episodes, you give them 3 episodes, and we're not going to ding people for taking payment to make stories they want to make. So I think she has a very strong narrative vision that is interfered with, I think, perhaps, again, by this. We go on about it, but, I mean, it's worth noting. It definitely dips in the second episode. That, to me, was the fill. The first episode with the police procedure I found very interesting, amusing almost in the detail to which Singh went to tell us exactly what happened. I mean, his recall is incredible. Mm-hmm. And from our lovely Dr. Vaya. And then the third episode brings in the cultural and economic situation that these people are in with some very chilling stories and some very pitiable stories as well. So I think those two episodes are very strong. So just watch episode 2 on 1.25, my friends, and you'll all be fine. So definitely recommend watching it. Definitely recommend watching it in the original Hindi and English. There's plenty of English. You won't get bogged down, I don't think. And yes, let us know, as always, what you thought.
Sarah, you asked Sasha, but did this make you want to continue watching the Indian Predator series?
Yes. Yes, I will. I like this. It's a different narrative style. It's a different flavor. And I like hearing different languages and opening my mind, having my mind opened to serial killers. But, you know, the rhythms of the predominantly American made true crime are my lullabies. I love it. But to move to this different style, this different type of narration with that slow plodding but interesting first episode, I found really refreshing. So, yes, I will be seeing the secret diary and the possible cannibalism. What about you, Mari?
Same. It definitely did that. I want to see the next one. I think I'm more interested in two because I think it's going to be a different director. Yeah. So I want to see the differences, you know, I kind of want to see the differences between how, if they're approached differently. So I think they knocked it out of the park here. I think Netflix India is doing amazing things. So I can't wait to see the next one.
Mm, wonderful. So Sasha, do you have a recommendation for our listeners today?
Yeah, I looked up a few things because I don't know about like the South Asian listeners out there, but I didn't know that there were this many serial killers in India. So I need to like go read up on it a little bit more. But there's a book called The Deadly Dozen, India's Most Notorious Serial Killers. Ooh. And yeah, and it looks like it goes through, again, 12 serial killers. And one was like a school teacher who killed his lovers with cyanide because he would, I think, tell them this was like a plan B. But instead, it was actually cyanide.
Oh, that's a very painful death.
Yeah.
And look at this, like subverting like expectations again, like another serial killer, a male serial killer using poison. Like in the U.S., that's like.
Right. It's not a thing. Women
very
do.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So I just, it's very interesting. And anyway, there's a bunch of it. I haven't read it, so like don't come for me. But it was 4.5 stars with 300 ratings. And it just looks very interesting. So I'm definitely going to buy it. I think that's my recommendation.
Yeah. Oh, terrific. We'll put the details in the show notes and you can send us a speak pipe memo, Sasha, once you've read it. We'll let our listeners know.
Will do.
And Mari, what about you? Do you have a recommendation for our listeners?
Yes. So keeping in our theme of Indian-based true crime. I did watch a few years ago, I want to say it was like 2 years ago, when HBO dropped they're doing their true crime series with I Love You Now Die and What Happened to Garrett Phillips. They also dropped Behind Closed Doors. It is a very interesting docuseries about an Indian family who they woke up one day and their servant and their daughter were found murdered in their house.
Oh.
And yeah, and I mean, and this is like a locked like compound house. They had it was such a mystery. It was a big like media presence. When I watched the show, it felt to me like almost like India's version of JonBenet Ramsey, because the mystery of it all is like, how did they, like who murdered who, like were they? It's a lot. It's kind of messed up too. So you know, it's deep in the gore and stuff like that. Like they don't show much, but I mean what they think happened is pretty messed up. So just a warning there. But if you watch this will kind of be right up your alley. And it was a really good mystery as to all like, how could this have happened behind a locked door? So that's on HBO Max, Behind Closed Doors on HBO Max. What about you, Sarah?
Well, I'm sticking with Netflix India. They haven't steered us wrong yet. This is from last year. It was a series called Crime Stories, Indian Detectives. It's 4 episodes, but Mari, don't worry. Each one is a different case. So they are doing a lovely 45 minutes on some fascinating cases. And as the title tells us, Indian Detectives, it really looks at the policing methods in India, which is a whole other country, everybody. And I definitely recommend that. Look, the cases that they pick are very sensational, but also why wouldn't they? Because they want to draw us in. There is much more of a focus on culture and community than we would get typically, I think, in an American serial documentary. So, yeah, I recommend that. You're nodding, Sasha. Have you watched that?
I watched the first episode and I think I forgot about it. I don't know what happened. Listen, Bollywood puts out so much stuff that you like forget. Okay. Trying to watch Indian movies is a lot because you have to keep, I literally have to go on Google and be like, Bollywood movies that came out 2022 to make sure I've watched them all. So it makes sense.
It's a whole job.
Mm-hmm.
At Crime Scene, we're eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter @CrimeScene, that's S-E-E-N. email us at crimescene@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at crimescenepodcast. Mm-hmm. Sasha, what have you got going on and where can the people find you?
Yeah, I have a few things going on. So you can follow me weekly over on the Mess Magnet Rehab Up feed, where same network, but very different vibe, where, you know, maybe after you listen to Crime Scene, you're like, okay, I need a break. Well, Vibes Only podcast, where Kirsten McKennis and I cover pop culture and just like anything in the news that's messy. Mess Magnets has you covered. So I do that every week over on Rob Has a Podcast / Mess Feed. Check that out. And I also covered She-Hulk over on Post-Show Recaps with Jason Reed. So if you're into Marvel, if you're into fun, if you're into women's empowerment, go check the show out and the podcast. And if you're like, I can't keep track of any of this, you can just follow me on Twitter at funsize_04, where you'll know what I'm up to every week. Thanks so much, y'all, for having me. Like, so much fun as always. And what a wild damn show. Like, I can't.
Mari, where can the people find you?
She booked and busy. But you can find me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's two, like the number two. Every week, me and Matt Scott bring you the Wrestling Rehab Up podcast. And you can hear us go over the highlights in this week in wrestling from WWE, AEW, all that good stuff. You don't even got to watch wrestling. Just come and listen to me and Matt with our wonderful guests talk about wrestling. So you can go to robhasawebsite.com/wrestlingfeed to subscribe, and then please go rate and review, and then just here on Crime Scene. Well, not only do we have our Instagram, but we do have a SpeakPipe. So look into our show notes if you want to drop a comment, a suggestion, anything for us. You can record yourself,
confess to a crime.
Okay, please don't do that.
Oh my God.
I would kill over.
Shut it down.
Oh God. But yes, leave us a speak pipe. You can find that book in the show notes. What about you, Sarah? Where can the people find you?
They can follow me if they like on Twitter at Sarah Carradine, and everything that I'm doing is there. Mari, what do we have coming up next week?
Next time on Crime Scene, My Daughter's Killer, the French and German documentary from Netflix, which our amazing guest, Beth Dixon. You can watch it and send us your comments and questions on Instagram, Twitter, or SpeakPipe.
Thanks to Sasha for joining us, to Will from America for the theme music, Tricky Rice for the graphics, and Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Until next time, case
closed.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.